Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm excited to announce a panel on electronic healthcare record systems and blockchain potential challenges and the road ahead. My name is Horst Rebelmeier. I'm a professor at Modul University Vienna in Austria, and I've been doing blockchain research for about 6 or 7 years now. And blockchain and healthcare is one of the big topic the big topics that comes up every time you hear somebody talking about how the whole healthcare system is going to transform. And I'm very excited here today to have these panel members. So without any further ado, I'm going to start with a short introduction round. And I'm asking everyone on this panel to briefly introduce himself and to say what they have done so far in the area of electronic health records and blockchain. I'm going to start with Jim Poteat, who is the technology leader and senior director for revenue cycle development with Oracle Cerner. Jim?
Yes, good afternoon, evening, morning to everyone. Jim Poteat. I have 25 years experience in the healthcare and payments industry. I own a process patent on clinical data exchange via HIPAA X12, which is a US standard, and HL7 FHIR for claim reimbursements that require clinical data. This reduces the administrative cost in the transaction, as well as better data privacy and a better security posture, and potentially takes out middlemen at least in the US industry that adds tremendous cost in these transactions.
Thank you. The next one would be Mike Gold, the founder and CEO of Gartam, a company founded in Estonia that has been active in the research and development of blockchain protocols for a very long time in the space. Mike?
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, indeed. I think we can safely say that we have deployed the first ever blockchain in healthcare, which was in 2008 in Estonia. The use case was data integrity, and it is still used today throughout the Estonian healthcare system to guarantee the immutability of healthcare records.
Thank you, Mike. And the next one would be Anjum Khurshid, who is a chief data scientist at Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare and faculty member of Harvard Medical School.
Hi, everyone. So I have been, I was trained as a physician when we were using paper charts, and then have been part of the digitization of healthcare in the US since mid-2000s, and then have helped in building health information exchanges to connect EHRs and also clinical decision support systems within EHRs. And over the last 6 years or so, started also working on projects or research related to applications of blockchain in healthcare to see how it can address some of the gaps that we have not been able to set with a traditional health information technology.
Thank you, Anjum. The next one will be Suresh Sivagnanam, who is the former owner of Modul University and the founder and CEO of VDoc.
Hi everyone, and again, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone in terms of where we are. As Horst mentioned, my involvement has been with not only with the education side of things, but also with healthcare. One of the important things that I've recognized as being looking at businesses within healthcare over the last 25 years is the importance of the healthcare record. I think with blockchain and the integrity of how this data is transferred, I think it's becoming more and more important. Pre-pandemic, what we saw was patients effectively being mindful about speaking to doctors and healthcare professionals via Zoom, via Teams, via video, and certainly by telephone. That's totally changed. And what you see now is the market has totally changed in terms of healthcare, and the patient to healthcare professional relationship has totally changed. So effectively, what the discussion today is definitely current, and it's really important in terms of the next challenge that healthcare has in terms of the transfer of data securely from patient to healthcare professional on a global basis, that is. Thank you, Horst.
Yeah, thank you, Suresh. And last but not least, of course, Alex Norta, researcher and entrepreneur and the founder of Dumaxion.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much. Yes, I was
actually an associate professor at Tau Tech. I know Artur Buldas also quite well, who's also
All
very
right.
prominently involved in Gartam, of course. I have worked on smart contract systems starting in 2001, unwittingly, when I started my PhD thesis at TU Eindhoven many years ago, not even having any blockchain systems around at the time, but everything really was already about smart contract, DAO-based collaboration and so on. Then as an associate professor, I had a PhD student who was actually at the University of Göttingen in Germany. We worked on creating this framework of the so-called machine-to-everything economy, where blockchain is, of course, very relevant. So this PhD thesis was defended in Göttingen in December 2019. So 2020, my PhD student got the so-called Klartext Award. And as a result, e-healthcare I see as a subset, of of the machine to everything economy, and as a result, I still have a PhD student. I still have a PhD student who works on e-healthcare, and with my company Damaxion. So what we do with my other PhD student ongoing, Alexander, we work on sharing critical e-healthcare data, critical e-healthcare data for high quality diagnostics. That's kind of the idea. And with my company Damaxion, I work on multi-factor challenge sets of sovereign identity authentication, which is quite critical for sharing data based on multiple challenge sets. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. And the first topic I would like to discuss is, do we really need blockchain, or what can blockchain do for healthcare? You have already raised many issues, but Mike, since you mentioned it, you said you started with blockchain in 2008. And anyone who knows about the space knows 2008 was the year the Bitcoin white paper appeared. And in 2009, I think it was January 3rd, there was the first implementation of the Bitcoin core node. So that means you have been in the space earlier than most people think that it exists. And I know in 2016, I think you had 1 million health records of Estonians on blockchain, right? Is this correct?
Yeah, that's right. To say on blockchain, I think it would be a bit misleading, though. I think healthcare mm-hmm. records are using blockchain. You know, based on our experience, if, you know, I'd say a few lessons over the last 15 years. One is, if you need to mention the word blockchain, you've already lost. Mm-hmm. You know, the only people who recognize or relate, you know, are interested in this are innovation departments. And you can waste a lot of time thinking, going, talking to healthcare departments about blockchain. Absolutely nobody cares. It's what it can do that matters, right? I think the second thing that we've learned is the opportunity for blockchain in healthcare has always been security. In Estonia, it was about data integrity, so that anyone can guarantee that the healthcare records are consistent, that they have an audit trail, that they have provenance, and you can verify them without having to trust all the parties in between that have been managing those records or who would have access to those records. And I would say that in my experience, if you are storing anything on a blockchain, you've already failed. Just the complexity of healthcare means that you can absolutely use healthcare blockchain. There are so many use cases, but if you're storing data on the blockchain, you're asking for a world of trouble. So those are, I'd say, the three things we've learned. We have 15 years of scar tissue trying to develop enterprise blockchain solutions. So it's certainly challenging, but the opportunity is still there.
So what would be the best option? So can we use blockchain? You mentioned integrity, but for any other use cases in connection with healthcare?
Interoperability is a fantastic use case. In this case, you don't need the records on the blockchain, but you can use the blockchain as a trust anchor for passing information across different parties. In healthcare more broadly, I think the pharmaceutical track and trace is just an amazing opportunity. You know, we're working in in Africa now, where you effectively create a token per GS1 code, and that gives you the traceability all the way to frontline care workers who can verify medicine without having to log into a database for verify or get a credential somewhere. I think the clinical trials and the ability to verify and search patient records and get a verifiable result without destroying privacy is another really exciting use case that we've been working on in Sweden. There's an unlimited number of use cases. The challenge is getting the technology right so that you don't scare people off and by privacy and putting healthcare records where they could be accessed by others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Horst, I can add to that. From our implementation or the thoughts was exactly the same. We were looking to ways to simplify clinical data interchange. And in the US market, healthcare is very slow to change from a technology perspective. And we found a way to leverage existing protocols that have been in the industry and actually mandated by law to insert a token or a hash key in a medical claim.
Yeah.
That allows you to hit an API that is a pointer to the clinical data that's needed to assess that for claim reimbursement. It's a specific use case, but exactly, it is security based. It's a better operational model. You're not sending packaged data across the wire. You're allowing that API exchange model where the data stays in the origin system, throughout the process. And there's a whole middle industry in the U.S. market that monetizes gathering this data. And so there's a tremendous opportunity to reduce the cost to the providers and to the payers, in this use case.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that when I was working on the paper about 3-4 years ago, that the big incumbents in the United States, you know who they are. They were kind of reluctant to change. But from what you're telling me now, it seems there has been a lot of progress been made in between in the last 3 years.
There has been federal policy that has forced some of these players to interoperate, to work better together, because there are, I think, adverse market incentives to share data across platforms. And that's where I think the point that Mike was making is that I think where interoperability can be helped by being able to use an underlying framework that allows for democratization of data without concerns for privacy, because that has been used as a primary reason for not sharing information, is to protect the privacy confidentiality of patients within organizations. Because in the US, at least, and many other countries as well, data are stored by those who are providing services and not by those who are receiving those services, which is us as patients. As a result, they become the third party that has to now share information with somebody else, and they would require consent of the patient, or they will have to implement their own policies for protecting privacy, confidentiality. So, one of the important parts of this is there are two other use cases that I wanted to mention. One is identity management within healthcare, which is very important in terms of who has access to what information, who is provided what information, because they can be very serious and very personal information that has long-term consequences. So being able to, ensure identity is a very important role that will be played in healthcare in the future. And we have had a difficult time in doing that otherwise. And the other piece, which is also, I think at some point we can talk about it a little more in detail, is use of clinical data that is stored for clinical services, but use of that data for public health and for research, which again, there are big constraints in terms of doing that at a large scale. But as we saw in COVID-19, but that is needed to protect, many other citizens in terms of who is getting tested, who is positive, who is under treatment, all those information that are very personal. But at the same time, you require it at a population level to build your policies and strategies to fight an epidemic like COVID, which all of us agree is not the last time that we will have something like this. So I think both those use cases are pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anshum. Alex, you want to add something?
Yes. And sorry for the brief disturbance during my introduction with my children, but I wanted to say there's a very exciting change we observe coming in from this machine to everything economy paradigm. By the way, if anyone is interested in that, wrote a position paper about this, which was published as a journal paper. So just search for M2X economy at Norta on, say, Google Scholar, you will find the paper. But what we do then observe, certainly with respect to identity authentication, if we have a machine to everything economy, we could assume then that humans have wearables, yeah, and engage with systems. We have a decentralized, treatment landscape with many clinics involved who have to share critical data. And so you have devices, you have humans, you have systems, you have organizations. And if all of that is happening online, the engagement to, say, achieve on the fly with, say, personal healthcare records that get dynamically integrated in more static electronic healthcare records, say that hospitals manage. You have a trustless engagement situation to collaborate to achieve high quality diagnostics and also treatments. So the point is then that a single sign-on type of identity authentication is in such a context not sufficient. Instead, what you need, depending on the concrete context, is configurable challenge sets that then devices, systems, organizations, humans should respond to. Everything goes on-chained, so the configured challenge sets and the responses which need to be evaluated, preferably involving the help of blockchain decentralized knowledge graphs to manage the decentralized knowledge landscape in a unified view, and also with the help of blockchain oracles to bring in off-chain data sets and facts for response evaluation, so that in the end, if the responses meet the challenge requirements, that you can establish a trusted environment for sharing sensitive health data and caring for the diagnostics and treatment. So this is a very, very exciting landscape. And certainly when it comes to matters like identity authentication, I think this is very critical. Okay, I'm a bit biased then in this respect, given what I'm working on at the moment with my company, Dimaxion. But I believe independent from that, there's a lot of work to do in this evolving M2X, machine-to-everything economy framework, but that also e-healthcare is very much exposed to, and where, of course, blockchains are one very critical element. Thank you.
Well, can I just mention, it was actually within the UK today, actually, they launched a service which was effectively looking at the digital or the digitalization of over 40-year-olds effectively for an MOT. So the MOT effectively is looking at cardiovascular disease, it's looking at blood pressure, it's looking at pulse, it's looking... So this was launched today. The first thing that comes up is, how do I know my data is safe? How do I know my records? I mean, and this is current. This is actually launched today. And the number one thing that comes up is from the public, I can't trust it. So what we've heard around the panel so far is trust and authentication is number one, because effectively when you go to your live audience, that's the number one thing. And it's interesting enough, because the format that we're talking about here isn't so much talking about blockchain, as Mike said. No one really needs to know it's about blockchain. It's about trust and authentication. Very similar to what we do with our banking apps. And that's what it is. I don't really care what's happening in the background. As long as I see some authentication going on, I feel safe. And that's very similar to what a patient's going to feel as well. As long as they're able to authenticate and effectively to authorize a transfer of data of some type, they'll be happy. So this is a quite a roadblock that we face today in the UK from this service being, and what does it boil down to? It boils down to an aging population globally, too few healthcare professionals coming through the network, and there's got to be various ways that we're effectively tackling a problem. The problem is, how are we looking after people and on a global basis with fewer healthcare professionals? So obviously we're going to hear things like AI come into it and digitalization, and we're going to look at the wearables and all of these really interesting things. But the bottom line is about trust. Whatever we do, it's the mind of the patient and how we effectively look at. And I mentioned about the pandemic. For me, the pandemic was a big game changer for the delivery of healthcare on a global basis. Prior to that, when I had my doctors effectively wanting to speak to consult with their patients online, it was, oh, it can't be done. Patients won't like it. It's not going to happen. The pandemic completely changed that landscape. Now, every one of my doctors and every one of my patients don't want to travel. They don't want to effectively come into London or go to Manchester or go to Birmingham. But say, listen, I'll do it on a phone call. The next thing running alongside that is the patient record, because it may not be that same healthcare professional, pharmacy or pharmaceutical company dealing with that particular patient. It could be on a global basis. So trust and authentication is very, very important. And I think you can blow everyone's mind with blockchain and all the other bits that go with it. Blockchain is going to be the innovator and the mobilizer that we use. But I think it's important to understand what we're actually trying to achieve in terms of trust with the end user.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if you would agree, but I would also say blockchain is just a piece in the puzzle, and we have so many technologies at hand. And if we could combine them, then we could create completely new systems. But for me, it's just funny that we are discussing these opportunities that we have, and I've been doing this for many years. And just to give you a story, a couple of weeks ago, I went to a doctor of mine for a regular checkup health examination, and I was with her before, but she changed the clinic she's working for. And so what I needed to do for half an hour, so I would need to give her all my data again, because she's lost everything and she had a piece of paper in front of her and writing everything down. So I would like to ask you if you could name the most advanced solutions. Of course, you should not only talk about your company. It could be your company, but you also should name some competitors. Or could you name some countries that you think are well advanced because of legislation? Or where do you see the next big steps when it comes to the evolution of healthcare with an eye on blockchain, maybe, but not only blockchain? It could also be AI or all these other technologies that we've just mentioned. Any ideas? Where should I go in the future?
Well, okay. I mean, if I jump in here, only because with what we do at the moment, we're crossing borders with regards to transfer of data, or the anticipated transfer of data, and the boundaries that we face. So the problem that you've got at the moment with countries is that each country, you will have a certain type of model that they're working with. The issue is understanding that model and the language between those two different countries. So it is actually transferring data, right? That's the key thing. Every country and every jurisdiction has its own way of how it deals with its patient record. I'll talk about the UK very simply, because we are on an e-record at the moment, which effectively is a summary patient record. So you will all remember, well, some are younger than me around the table, but I think one of the key things about this is where we used to go to our doctor and they would have notes, you know, in a bundle. Yeah. So effectively these are handwritten notes. So what was happening within the UK was effectively the summary patient record. So the summary patient record went on effectively what we call the EMR. The issue there is, you wouldn't believe within the UK that there were blockages between regions, you know, so a London patient wouldn't be able to effectively go to Birmingham, for example, or Manchester and have their record being FXE transferred. That's slightly changed, yeah, with terms within the UK. Big problem at the moment is if I go from the UK, if I go into Europe, we're still having to transfer that data in a different way. Yeah, there's no commonality in terms of a platform. So it's the platform which is the issue between jurisdictions, which is where this discussion is effectively taking us in terms of how we can transfer that data on a global basis, securely, authentically, and a way which effectively bypasses everything that is problematic at the moment.
Yeah, I still feel like there's a lot to be said in terms of the current systems that are applicable successfully in different countries around the world, because they actually are working in legal and regulatory frameworks that were probably developed, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And so this is definitely a new challenge for a lot of regulations. We had done some research that we have not yet published, but looking at legal frameworks across the world, and you find that it's all over the place, where most of the legal frameworks for blockchain are as a reaction to what is happening in financial markets than what is happening, what is the potential of the use of these services for social services and for health, where I think it solves a lot of the system problems that many governments have spent literally hundreds of billions of dollars in trying to fix, whether it's interoperability or patient linkage or record linkage or security. And so I think that there's a big gap between those two, which limits kind of widespread applications of this. The other thing I think we ought to also separate in terms of concepts is that one, I think most people outside the industry look at blockchain as like another technology that is used for doing something like a SaaS service or something. But at the same time, I think what is essential are really the principles that define what this blockchain technology is. I think that's what, when we think of saying we can add different technologies together, in which blockchain may be one of the platforms, is that it has the peer-to-peer network, it has the security, the encryption, the democratization, all those aspects which are important. So I would think that eventually, as we think of global, movement of patients as well as providers, electronic medical records will have to be in the wallets of patients, that it will be accessible by the patient in moving around, because we can't fix governments in terms of how they make, policies, because they will be reactive and they will be behind by 10 to 15 years. And in that period, I think people will suffer because they would not be able to move their data from one place to another. So there are, I think, two sets of applications that we should look at. One set of applications which are focused on organizations and how organizations interoperate, which is hospitals, clinics, etc. And that will be much more regulatory and compliance-based. The other flip side of that is when you get control of your healthcare data to the patient, in terms of wallets that can be, moved anywhere. So you have access to that information anywhere you go, because that solves the problem. No government has so far legislated saying you cannot keep your data and move or share it with anybody, because as you were mentioning, Horst, you're the one who is providing that data to any provider who is looking at it. And there are multiple examples of vaccinations, of using data across countries, of being able to share data, which I think get very complicated when we have organizations controlling that information, and they get much more simplified when we have individuals controlling that information.
100%. Yeah, I would completely agree there. I think from my experience, to answer your question, Horst, I think Estonia, of course, has always been seen as a leader in digital innovation. I think, however, the mistake people make is thinking that model is exportable to other countries. Estonia is a small country, 1.3 million, Alex, I think I'm right there. And they've been trying to export that model to other countries. And the lesson from Estonia is one of the reasons they were so successful is because they had limited budget and it required people to cooperate, right? And you take this to France and every ministry has a budget. They don't want to share that money with other, with IBM owns that budget or whoever. And it's very difficult to get collaboration going between different government departments, in particular healthcare. You know, I'm calling in from Nairobi today, and I'm working here in Kenya with the different healthcare teams. And I see a tremendous appetite to leapfrog in healthcare, just as they did, you know, with telecom without having the landlines and going straight to mobile. I see a tremendous desire to innovate. And I think the lesson is interoperability is the challenge, not just in healthcare, but it's the challenge in government. And the mistake people make is thinking the answer is to create another shared database, whether that's a DLT or whether that's an Oracle database. Getting people to change their behavior and getting people to upload data into a centralized system is never going to happen. It'll never succeed because nobody wants to change their behavior or share their data in a way that they cannot control. And so the real answer, I think, for blockchain in emerging nations, developing nations, is the ability to have what we call selfish sharing. So you can have, let's use the pharma example, and I'm going to use a GS1 code as a tokenized GS1 code that's created by a manufacturer. And let's say it's shipped to a customs authority in a developing nation. They can take an action based on that GS1 code. They can download the token. And they can decide who they want to share that information with. They can share it to no one. They can share it back to the manufacturer. And they can even share it downstream, down to the clinic saying, hey, we've received this medicine. And so the interoperability piece there is using blockchain to allow people to verify the provenance and integrity of the data they receive. But at the same time, they decide who they want to share data with, as opposed to loading it into a centralized database. And so interoperability is an incredibly exciting opportunity for blockchain, especially in developing nations where they have the opportunity to have a green field.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. I think Alex, also Jim, I think you were next, and then it's Alex.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thought that we've had is exactly that. It's not a centralized database that has everything. You have to interchange the data. It can be a network, an EMPI that I control as a patient, and I just have pointers to all the systems that have my data. And when you desire to share your data with someone, you have control to do that, and you have a mechanism, and the expense of moving data into a centralized database kind of goes away. Extremely complex to implement, but absolutely something that every country could benefit from.
Thank you, Jim. And Alex, you want to add something to this discussion?
About the Estonian experience, which was marvelous for me. I'm not in Estonia anymore now at the moment, but I lived there for some 6 years while I was at Taltech. Also the e-healthcare, it's really fantastic. But the country doesn't really run on blockchain. It runs on this X-Road system, which is, say, a cryptographic timestamping chain. Yeah. Which is centrally controlled, to put it very informally. And also
So I think they use X-Road for interoperability, and they use blockchain for the timestamping, the verification, the immutability of the records. The challenge, again, is Estonia X-Road is based on this concept of PKI, where everyone has a smart card, and that it's very difficult to export because they learn. It's not the cost of the technology; it's the cost of educating everyone in the population and how to use it. Sorry to interrupt you there. I just wanted to correct that.
No, this is it's very good. I mean, this is absolutely correct for all that you say. And there's one thing I wanted to say, because we mentioned the term. I mean, we mentioned trust, yeah, and how to achieve trust in this complex collaboration environment, say in an M2X setting. You mentioned, Mike, that there's the Estonian ID card, which also the nurses and doctors and so on use, yeah, also for the healthcare system engagement, and it's the centrally controlled single sign-on, yeah. Where you just get a one challenge, so you receive four digits, and you then have to type that in related to your ID card, or maybe on a connected to the smartphone. And there have been so this doesn't really, I mean, this opens up security challenges, because you can't have this fine-grained access management, which you would get with multi-factor challenge sets, yeah, that you can configure flexibly, yeah. What I talked about earlier. And there were also in Estonia cases that ended up in the news, where nurses say the neighbor showed up for some health treatment, and the nurse say was a bit curious, yeah, and without actually being permitted to do so, peeped into the health records, and this had all sorts of implications then. I mean, these empirical anecdotal stories really show that we've got to do something about about the trust establishment. And so, for example, the Estonian ID cards, yeah, and there are many other examples, similar examples in other countries working the same way. They don't suffice. So this is really an important point if we bring in blockchains for collaborative healthcare management, provisions, diagnostics, treatment, and so on. This is really a choke point that needs to be tackled. So Estonia is a little bit stuck there in its past success, yeah, with the X-Road system, which is a bit like the backbone. So you can't rip out, allegorically speaking, the backbone out of a human and replace it so easily. Hard to do. But I think, indeed, in developing countries that are not hyper-regulated and have all sorts of legacy systems. So, for example, X-Road and all this e-governance, Finland is trying to adopt a lot of that with limited success, because they have their own systems, then they have a lot of bureaucracy, and people who then like to demonstrate and go on strike and so on, if, you know, their job suddenly are at risk, because X-Road comes along, say, and overturns the need for many people and disintermediates many and so on. So this is really a big problem. Yeah. But I think if you go to Africa, and since I'm actually also South African, if you are trying to innovate and do some digital transformation in, say, an African country that's not hyper-regulated, doesn't have all these legacy systems and so on, I think to experiment, if there are good running cases, probably much more fruitful than in, sadly, many European countries that have a long history with, you know, legacy system establishment and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I would like to come back to the issue of private data. I think, Mike, you mentioned that everybody wants to be in control of his or her own medical data, especially if you ask somebody, then they will tell you, that's my data, I'm not going to share it with anyone. But if push comes to shove, I think many people would be happy to have some kind of intermediaries. It's kind of like with Bitcoin, you know, everybody should have their own private keys to own the Bitcoin. But, you know, people are lazy, people lose their keys, so they have some kind of custodian. And isn't it the same with healthcare systems? Wouldn't it be more comfortable for people if they just leave the data somewhere? They don't know where it is. For most people, not the ones that are especially picky, but just to have a system that's a little bit like it is now, data is kind of in centralized databases, but they just need to go to a doctor and identify themselves. And in the future, how can we handle that if we have really a system where everybody is in charge of his or her own data? And how would authentication work with private keys, with some kind of codes, with biometric identifiers? Do you have solutions for that? Any
idea? If I can jump in.
Please go ahead.
Anshum, go ahead, and then Suresh.
Thank you.
Your turn.
I think that we need to understand how the healthcare system works well, because that's important. It has been established over years, and we were talking about trust. And part of the trust is not only in data, but it is also in terms of who is providing those services. So most people trust their physicians or their doctors. And yet they may not trust the organization or the system. And so that's something to remember. The other thing is that healthcare data is also unique in the sense that there is a lot of complexity to the interpretation of that data. So I think for some, the role of an intermediary, as you were talking about, may not be the intermediary that is storing all the data, but an intermediary that actually helps you understand what it means. And can also differentiate when you're getting data from multiple places. For instance, you may get lab results from multiple places and that have to be interpreted. So that, I think, will be a part of the administration or operations of data management within healthcare. It's not as easy as switching it from a centralized system to a decentralized system. I think we will also have to understand how the role of providers in the new system of management of information in different ways will be changed. Because if your doctor does not believe the data that you present to them, then that data is useless, right? Because you are seeking information or help from a doctor of data that you understand very little yourself. In fact, there are obviously studies with we have also seen during the last epidemic where people were just Googling stuff, trying to understand what it means, and they may actually come to wrong conclusions about either their risk or the kinds of treatments that may be available, especially when there is a lot more garbage on the internet than there is really scientific information. And so it takes time to develop good science and to be able to get consensus among professionals on how to treat patients for certain conditions. So it is much more complicated than I think many other industries in terms of the how the information is used by consumers, as well as by those who are providing that information. So I think that has to be taken into consideration when we are talking about whether we need intermediaries or not, because we were trying to set up a system with people experiencing homelessness in Austin, Texas. And again, initially, conceptually, it just seemed like, you know, decentralization would be very helpful. All that will be wonderful because it will address the issues of interoperability and this fragmentation of services, et cetera. But when it came to the point of there is a very elaborate checking system that confirms for the patient that if somebody is acting as a doctor, that they have been fully trained, they have been certified, they have been tested to provide those services. If somebody is dispensing medication, they are authentically providing that medication. There are a lot of developing countries where, you know, 2/3 of the medications are counterfeit. So it's very hard then to protect these things. And I think that will be the challenge for as we move forward, is that there are systems in place for actually the safety of patients. And those, how do we translate those systems? Because then a certified, you know, nurse, a certified physician, a certified pharmacy has to have a role in the management of that information and interpretation of that information that a patient cannot just by themselves just use, unlike currency, for instance.
Thank you, Anshum. So Suresh is next, and then Alex, it's you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think absolutely right. I think the key thing here is, and a lot of this has been mentioned before in terms of the legality and also in terms of the data that we require as well. Of course, you mentioned a real life example about going to two different doctors. That the reality of it is,
it was one doctor. She just lost my records. Yeah,
you lost your record. But if you look at the private sector, just generally, globally, every doctor asks the same questions. Yeah. I mean, in order, they may not have your patient record, but they ask you the same questions. It doesn't matter which country you're in. They'll basically go through the same set of questions each time. And it's that minimum data set. Yeah. Because most of us, and actually, funny enough, and this happens to most of our patients, if you ask them what their blood type is, they won't be able to tell you. If you ask them what their allergies are, they'll go, yeah, well, I'm sort of allergic to dairy, eggs, nuts, whatever it's going to be. It's this minimum data set that you require, which you can transfer around the world. And then what you're doing is you're adding onto it. Like you said, it's going to be a trusted platform. There is no way in a million years that I can see, certainly in my lifetime, us having a super system that's effectively, from a legal point of view, allowing us to effectively share data with public sector organizations in the US, public sector organizations within the UK. It has to be a disruptor. That disruptor ultimately would be a trusted platform that I, as a patient, will say, I'm happy to use that and it was most possibly be a private organization to hold my data. And I will give the key to unlock that file to whoever I want to, wherever I'm in the world. And that's what I see happening very quickly, certainly within the next few years, because that's the way where healthcare is going, and it will have to go that way in order to face the challenges and take on the challenges that everyone's facing. But actually going back to the reality of it is, what is a patient record? A patient record is a minimum data set that any doctor will effectively need. And there'll be obviously images and blood results and everything else. But to be honest, that comes part and parcel of the facts. But it's me as a patient saying, I will unlock my data. I will allow you to hold my data. And I'll take it from, in the UK, I'll take it from the NHS. And I'll say, can I have my patient record? And then I will go to this private organization and say, here's my patient record. Take all the details that you want from it. And I'll, whatever it is, pay a subscription or this, that, and the other, which means wherever I travel in the world, I'll give any doctor access to that record. And that's the way I think how it will be going in terms of the authentication and the trust issue. And every time that there's a blood result or an image, an MRI image, a CT, whatever we're talking about, I will ask that diagnostic company to upload that image or that result to my privately held data record. And that's the way I think things will be going.
Yeah, I think so too. So, Alex, you want to add something?
There was actually, Horst, you mentioned also, or you posed the question, where should we go to find these, paraphrasing, ideal blockchain-driven e-healthcare systems? And one territory that pops into my mind is the Emirates. So it was in 2020, I spent a month in Dubai for some project. And I learned about how they run things. So of course they have unlimited funds, it seems. They have an administration which is extremely, extremely motivated and eager to show off how they are cutting edge. Yeah, this is almost on a maniac level. It's really impressive. And they are completely crazy for blockchains too. They're also, they're already, I mean, they use in all sorts of areas blockchains for e-governance, yeah. And also in healthcare, they use blockchains very heavily. The other thing they do is they integrate for e-governance systems with other countries. And the reason for that is because I believe only 17% of the public, 17, I believe, are actually Emiratis. The rest are expats coming from all sorts of other territories. And there are cases, I mean, that triggered this need to cross integrate. Say you come to the Emirates and you very quickly want to have a driver's license certified for the Emirates. And so there's, depending where you come from, there's an integration to data sources from, well, where you arrived from, based on agreements. Yeah. To very quickly, so you just go to a police station and you swipe through your passport and everything, bam, 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 gets processed and out comes your Emirati driver's license if everything works out. So also for expats passing away. So certainly in a Muslim context, this is a situation that very quickly has to be processed. So also here you have cross-country integration. So I can't say at this point, I would have to do research. If for healthcare, certainly also in the Muslim territory or context, this is can be quite sensitive. Yeah? Certainly they have very impressive blockchain-based healthcare systems in the Emirates. So if you just go on a search engine, search a little bit for Emirates and blockchain and e-healthcare, you'll find wonderful articles. Given that they have this track record of then integrating with other territories because of the very big expats, dominatingly large expat population in the country, Certainly, I could imagine that they would also try the same for e-healthcare. So I would say this is given the motivation level, the unlimited funds, and the eagerness to really show off to the world how they are cutting edge on every level, like like a perpetually learning society. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think this is a very good territory, and also being rather small. Yeah. So you can very quickly change laws and regulations, a bit like in Estonia. Yeah. But so this is very conducive if the right people come together with the right mindset and willingness. I think that's a very good territory to look into e-healthcare and blockchain and its application. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, time flies. I just had a look at my watch and we're already coming close to 1 hour. So I would like to do one last round. I would like to ask all of you, what would be the next step? Ideally, one that involves blockchain. So in the beginning, we were talking about the future of healthcare and what we want to achieve. But if you could elaborate a little bit on what you're working right now, if you are working in a company or if you're doing research, what you're researching right now, and what do you think what needs to be solved rather sooner than later? Jim, if I may start with you, because you're right from the industry. So what's your next, what's your wish list for Christmas? What do you want to achieve?
Yeah. I think it is, making sure that, a health network is created on top of the various systems from the various vendors across the country that allows individuals to access their healthcare data. It also needs to tie in financial healthcare data as well throughout that. So I think that would be, a great vision to have.
But excuse me, are you talking about the United States as a whole when you talk about Oracle Cerner?
It could apply to the UK as well, who's broken up to various regions.
Mm-hmm.
Really any country level, type of network, could be made available. And we're seeing that, as a vendor in the healthcare industry. A vision of taking that EHR to, country levels. But, there is interoperability needed and, security across that, because there's never going to be one EHR, in a country or a region. There's going to be multiple.
Yeah, I'm just asking because before we heard it's easier to implement something in Estonia with 1. Something million people or the United Arab Emirates, but I think when you're talking, then you always have, let's say, the United States in mind, or like Leo said, Great Britain. Is there a chance for you to have some kind of test regions where you can try out things?
Yes, absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. That's, when you look at it, at least in the U.S., you really have to do it at a regional level. Sometimes, if you can get buy-in from a large IDN that has services across the continuum of healthcare from, the birthing side all the way through rehab, through assisted living facilities to, buy into the vision and help implement those things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, Mike, what are you working on right now? What's the next big hurdle that you need to overcome? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry about that. I think the first time it's happened on this call. It must be a record.
I think somebody had to do it.
We're on a mission to end counterfeit medicine. This has been tried. Many have tried. Many have failed, right? And so the question we have, can we learn from our past failures, is why counterfeits are still existing? And is it a technology problem? Is it a legislation problem? Is it a governance problem? And I think we're on the right track. We've been working with many pharma companies, and the way they create what's called a GS1 code, right? It's a serialization code that goes onto Pharma. They use a system called SAP ICH, right? And this is how they create these GS1 codes. And if we integrate blockchain technology into that, right, it means that the pharma companies don't have to change their behavior at all, right? They just have to say yes. And so you can then create a token per GS1 code, right? And that can travel via digital means, via with the product, until you get the first mile and you can get the last mile, right? So a frontline care worker can scan that GS1 code, download the token, and verify the provenance of that medicine, right? So you don't need all the people in between to agree to do something. If you can get the first and last mile, and then you can start to work inwards until you get this interoperability solution where everybody's benefiting from others' information. So I think the time has come to plan towards eliminating counterfeit medicine. Of course, the first step that has to be done is serialization. If you don't have serialization, you can't have tokenization. But I'm going to Rwanda in September and giving a talk there at a healthcare conference. And the title of my talk is From Serialization to Tokenization, How We Can Effectively End Counterfeit Medicine in the World. It's really not that hard. The key requirement is not change behavior.
Thank you very much. Now, I know statistics that in some countries in Africa, the majority of the pharmaceuticals is counterfeit. And I think that's really a worthwhile goal. So Suresh, in your company, what are you working on right now? You mentioned some things before, but if I give you a timeline, let's say until Christmas, like Jim, what do you want to achieve?
I need just beyond Christmas, horse, yeah? And that's what I'm working on. Just beyond Christmas into 2024, we'll be okay. So one of the things that we're trying to do, I mean, and obviously having started our virtual service prior to the pandemic, I mean, we were one step ahead. And Mike will, obviously, if he's going to Rwanda, he'll be meeting Babylon there, who are my favourite people, not only in the US, but in Rwanda as well. But Babylon and I started a long time ago, and this was effectively where we saw that there was an opportunity. The opportunity was effectively looking at how healthcare was changing in terms of interaction between patients and doctors. I think the next step is that the electronic patient record, which is what we're working on at the moment. So we're working on the electronic patient record, where everything that we have spoken about here, we will looking to pilot in London in early 2024. And that pilot project will effectively, as we've seen around the panel, it has to be done on a regional basis. London gives us enough of a demographic to work with and a value chain. The value chain isn't only about secondary care, it's also about primary care and tertiary care as well. So I want that whole value chain to be looked at, and also the demographics effectively looking at the young, the working, and those who are effectively aging, as we all will be at some point. But I think that's the key thing. What I'm trying to effectively look at is the ultimate assisted care. So the ultimate assisted care, where that patient record is required, I feel, at most in the future years. So that's what we're working on at the moment.
Great. And Alex, you want to share some insights, maybe also with an eye on research?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I mentioned it before on the one insight, what I have been working on coming out of this M2X economy framework I developed with my former PhD student, Benjamin Lading, is multi-factor challenge set self-sovereign identity authentication. So I've mentioned it before several times. I developed after doing all the theoretical research into it and publishing about it academically and so on, I implemented an MVP, you could say, with the funding of the Next Generation Internet Ontochain project. So they were so kind to award me funding to build my MFSSA first system, which I'm trying to get more funding from NGI, but I'm open, of course, for any other funding for that. And what I'm trying to do, I also developed another system, and Mike, you mentioned counterfeiting. I developed, you could say, an NFT management app backed by, in the backend, by blockchain technologies. So primarily a lot with Swiss funding. So without surprise, the counterfeit products, we try to, as a running case for that, yeah, try to address where things like Tissot watches and so on. But of course, if you can, you know, assign NFTs not for the Bored Monkey memes, but for serious applications, like, say, products like medicine. Yeah, I mean, if you can secure with an NFT a Tissot watch, then surely you can also secure a critical type of medicine. Yeah, so that's not counterfeit. To have it checked throughout the logistics supply chains. And what I'm working on right now is to further secure these NFTs with an integration with the MFSSIA DApp. Yeah, so it's these two DApps I've worked on. On the one hand side, the MFSSIA, and then this logistics NFT management blockchain system, which has a very fancy, nice front-end mobile phone app also, so that you hide all the blockchain complexity in the background the way it should be. So I'm at the moment trying to get the funding in to integrate both. Yeah, and this is multi-purpose, so can of course very nicely be applied for e-healthcare and tracking critical medicines. And the other thing I'm interested in is the metaverse, which I think is inevitable, even when we hear all sorts of stories, we're not sure, is it going to succeed or will it fail? But I think in the end, it's inevitable. And there again, we have a trustless collaboration environment. Yeah? So if we do serious metaverse applications, not just for the gaming industry, but really to help to make serious business and industry transactions more efficient and effective. And also in such a context, it's my humble opinion that NFTs are very important to facilitate identity authentication in combination with multi-factor challenge set self-sovereign identity authentication. So this is what I'm working on. So I have these two MVPs and this vision orientation towards the metaverse, and as a running case, of course, e-healthcare is a very, very powerful and important one. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. And Anjum, what about you?
Yeah, thank you. I think so I have been conducting research in this area because I feel like one of the concerns I had was that a lot of technological advancement that is meant for adoption in healthcare actually happens without healthcare being actively involved or healthcare specialists being involved. If you look around, there are a few medical schools that are doing research in blockchain applications of healthcare, in healthcare, but it's mostly being done on the technical side. And while there is a lot of, like, some technical, I think, development that still has to happen in blockchain for adoption, and that is happening very fast, but I think the flip side of it is how healthcare is prepared to use a technology like blockchain is still fairly limited. And therefore, a lot of examples that we are even hearing about are usually examples that all of us who are relatively healthy, you know, are able to afford healthcare, our interactions with mostly primary care or outpatient, but healthcare data is very, very complex. So if you think of the data that is required for a surgical operation in neurosurgery, that set of data is very complex, and it's not just the normal minimum data set that we are talking about, or cardiology, other kinds of specialties. So I think being able to inform what technology has to solve for healthcare is important, and that is a close interdisciplinary development that has to happen. So I sit in the population medicine department of Harvard Medical School, and therefore I look at applications in public health mostly, because I feel like that's a bigger issue where system-wide transformations are much more impactful than how we will be able to change the practice of each physician or nurse, you know, at a patient level. And so we have been working in Texas to design a blockchain-based platform for preventive services for HIV patients, because There are real concerns of privacy, security, sharing of data. There is stigma affiliated with it. So therefore, patients are also, or candidates are also, not too keen to share their information. And it's a very fragmented set of providers who are providing these services, who are not talking to each other. So being able to use a technology like blockchain to be able to build trust among those who are afraid of sharing their information, but at the same time to build efficiency when fragmentation of the system currently prevents us to be able to track who is getting these services, why people are dropping off, what can we do in terms of interventions to improve outcomes and prevent something like this. So that's an area we are doing research in terms of how do these new technologies or emerging technologies like blockchain can help us solve these population level problems that are multidimensional. There is a strong social and personal preference in it, but there is also technological and governance issues that can be solved to help in providing better outcomes in these populations.
Thank you, Anjum. And thanks to all of you. You've been an amazing panel, and thanks for sharing your insights from the industry, but also from research. And I think this will be a great panel discussion for the conference. If anyone is interested in more information, please feel free to reach out to us. And I'm stopping this panel now and wish you all a good morning, evening, afternoon, or night, depending wherever you are. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.